Hey folks, welcome back to another episode of Stoner TV here on NuViso, coming to you from Leipzig, Germany. And today with a very special stuff that we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the question, are there aliens on this world? And are they interacting? Are they somehow working together with our governments? What about this entire alien narrative? And that's what I want to talk about. And we're going to start this with a very old theme. You know all of this. This is the dollar bill. Yeah? And you're all familiar with this symbol here. It's the eye in the pyramid, the great seal of the United States. I guess you all know that. I mean, if you wouldn't know the stuff about this pyramid and the eye symbol, probably you would not watch this channel. But what I want to focus on now, where I want to start this show, is at this very top of the pyramid. You can see that? This is the capstone, or it's also called the pyramidion. This is the final stone that you put on top of the pyramid, and by that it's the entire building is finished, it's sealed. So this is a very important, has a great symbolic value, this capstone, this pyramidion. Of course, in all esoteric schools, this is a big symbol. And here on the great seal, the capstone is not on top of the pyramid, but it's hovering above. It's hovering above. So what does that mean? For many years, I was thinking, okay, there's some, when we talk about rulership on top of the pyramid, there's something beyond, there's something over it. And what is that? And for many decades, or at least for many years, I was also following the idea that this symbolizes that on top of the rulership, there's something from something else, something beyond human, and the idea is that aliens might be on this Earth for a long time already. There's also pre-Seti, pre-Astro. In archaeology, you might find traces like this, and the idea is that the rulership comes from aliens. That they might even have been at the very dawn of humanity. They might have been at work. Some people even say, if you also follow work of Zachariah Sitchin and stuff, some people have even the idea that humans were created by some alien force. Or some alien beings, yeah? And this is what we're going to focus today. As I told you, for many years I was also on this, but in recent years I changed my mind. It has to do with more information that I'm getting, but also it's a process of inner growth that makes me look at things differently. And nowadays I'm really a humanist, and I see it's a human story, this entire alien stuff. And that's what I'm going to tell you about today. We're gonna jump in this with a charismatic figure in history, a man called Aleister Crowley. And of course you all know him. Aleister Crowley, a British guy. He called himself the Great Beast. He was a magician practicing in many occult teachings. He was finding occult orders and stuff like that, and well, an intriguing figure, and in any way he's a fascinating figure. I don't want to say he's good or bad or something like that. I mean, I just look at him, and in his age, in his time, he was definitely a fascinating figure. Somebody who was traveling worldwide, so I mean, he was an experienced man. Yeah, and what Crowley did was one of the things that he was doing was in Montauk. That's a little town in the state of New York, and it's at the very end of Long Island. Long Island, this big peninsula, and at the very end of it, there is this place called Montauk, and in this place, Crowley used to live for a while, and there he performed certain rituals. In which he tried to open up a gate, so to say, to communicate with other beings, other spirits, other entities, whatsoever. Interesting to mention, just by the way, that it's Montauk. We also have heard about the Montauk experiment. I guess you're familiar with that, and well, I guess it's just coincidence, isn't it, that it's at the same place. But hey, maybe the place is also important. That's what I always say. But okay, let's go back to Crowley. And what he did in Montauk, by these rituals, he claimed that he got in contact with a higher being, a higher soul. And this entity he called, or the entity himself called himself Lam, L-A-M, Lam. And Lam was, so to say, a teacher for Aleister Crowley. Aleister Crowley was, so to say, he was channeling the information coming from Lam. And that was, out of that, Crowley developed his teachings and his occult practitioners, all these ideas how to do rituals and all this stuff. He got this information, that's the way he says it, he got it from Lam. Now, Lam is a very interesting figure, because who is Lam? Crowley himself, he said that Lam is an ascended being, an ascended soul, somewhere from Himalaya regions. And if you hear that, Crowley was not the first to deal with entities of this cultural background. As a matter of fact, this entire New Age scene that came out of 19th century spiritistic circles, let's, for example, mention some names like Helena Blavatsky, Madame Blavatsky, the entire Theosophic Society, Annie Besant. I mean, these people, they were occultists in the 19th century. And at that time, it was on vogue to do these channelings. Of course, at that age, at that time, they didn't call it channelings. That's a modern term. At that age, they were speaking of seances, spiritism, seances, where you have media, certain human beings that have a talent, so to say, to channel these informations. They were called media. And that's what they were doing in those days, and all these people like Helena Blavatsky, like and Crowley and all these others, when they said where do they have the information from, they said, well, this comes from ascended souls from Tibet. They're coming terms like Shambhala, the inner empire of Tibet, and so the idea is that there are some masters that have ascended from the state of human being into some demigod or whatever you might explain that. They call it ascended, and those are the ones that they channel, and from those they get the information. And what I'm going to show you now is a picture of Lam, of this entity that Crowley was in contact with. And I tell you, I think this picture is really very important. Maybe it's one of the most important pictures, that one of the things you have to see before you leave, because you have to understand this. And this is the picture of Lam. And this Crowley himself painted this picture. This is the picture of this being that he was in contact with, that claims to come from this Shambhala, under Himalaya, from this tradition. And now, if we look at it, I guess it's striking the similarity to what we now in our modern worldview call the Greys, the aliens. It's just like that. Huh? It's got this big pear-shaped head. It's got no ears, these strange facial features. The only difference between a classic science fiction image of a gray is the eyes. This still looks like human eyes, while typically the grays are shown with these big black eyes and stuff. But that's the only difference. But all the other stuff is quite obvious, isn't it? This might be the prototype of what we call alien. And it's coming from Aleister Crowley. Now, isn't that interesting? There might even be some elder pictures like this. This is coming from, when was that made? 20s or even 1910s in this time. And there might even be elder similar graphics rooting back to the 19th century at that time when they were doing all these seances. As a matter of fact, at one time in my life, it was my Indian journeys, I got a book in my hands. I got it from some library in India. A book that was maybe from the 1910s, 1920s. And it was a book from England. And it was from those kind of people, from those spiritistic people. And in this book, they brought all the information that they were, as they say, channeling from entities. Now, in this book, they were saying these entities, they did come from Egypt. And they were saying that those were Egyptian gods, Egyptian spirits that they were channeling. Yeah? Also coming into stuff like Thoth, the great magician, and things like that. So they said they are in contact with these old Egyptian souls. And interesting enough, and sorry, I don't have that book, so I cannot present you the photos. I was looking for that, but you don't find those things easily also on Google. It's an old book. And in this book, there were also some images, some graphics, and they were very similar to this, very similar to this. And they were the paintings of that the medias they did these paintings. They said that's the way this entity looked like, and they looked like this. But also they had some Egyptian stuff, a certain a hat or something, some Egyptian features. So you could realize, okay, it's looking like a mixture of Egyptian, something like this, and also what our modern alien images. And that's interesting. I mean, it comes from this from this spiritism. That's another thing. It's not spiritual, it's spiritism. And these guys were already showing this. Now, we wonder with who did these people come into contact? That's something that I wonder in any case of channeling, because channeling nowadays in New Age circles, this is a big thing. There's so many on YouTube, you can find hundreds of channels that are channeling with certain entities, Kryon or whatever they call themselves, you know. And what I always wondered, because I never bought into this too much, because what I always wondered is, okay, you might channel something. And I'm not saying that this is all bullshit. I'm sure this is happening for this media. I mean, this stuff is happening. I was also witnessing seances, and I was witnessing people in trance, and I know that this is no bullshit. There's something going on. Yeah? But the question that always triggered me is, who are they channeling from? I mean, is there any guarantee that whatever where you get the information from, that this is the truth? Who is doing that? Who is channeling into Crowley and giving him all these informations? Is it really some universal divine wisdom or knowledge, or could it be that it's that the source of this informations, that these are entities, beings, whatever, that have an own agenda, that have an own idea of what they want to bring forward? So that's a deep doubt that I have in myself, or at least some skeptics, when I hear of channeled material. I'm not saying this is bullshit. I'm not saying they made it up. I know this is working, but where does the information come from? Is that trustworthy? Because I always tell you, you have to look in yourself. You know, this is the source, inside, in your heart. And I'm also only holding you a mirror so you could check in with your own soul. That's important. Channeling something else, well, where does it come from? What is it? Is that benevolent for us human beings or not? That's a good question. Yeah, and so, interestingly enough, this is where the source and the root of this modern narrative that we have of alien. And it started out with not with aliens, but with ascended masters from Tibet. And that's what Crowley was saying. Crowley never used the term alien or similar terms like extraterrestrial or something like that. He did not. He said, this is Lam, and this has something to do with ascended masters. Shambhala. That's where it's from. Same goes for Helena Blavatsky. She was in contact with a being that she called Master Moriah. Master Moriah. And that's the same thing. Master Moriah was described as an ascended being coming from Shambhala. So somehow connected with these Tibetan Buddhist roots. And there was no term at all at that time from alien or extraterrestrial or coming from some other planet. This just happened afterwards. Maybe the next generation, it was followers from Aleister Crowley, that somehow in the next generation, the narrative changed from ascended masters, it changed into aliens. Now it's in this these circles in this scene it's always about aliens, it's about the Galactic Federation and stuff there. But when this phenomenon started, it had nothing to do with aliens. Now that's the first thing that we have to keep in mind for this. Now channelings, Crowley was not the only one doing this. Crowley represents, so to say, because he's English, he has a lot to do with his English occult groups, but there were also occult groups in Germany in the 19th century and also in early 20th century. And this is also really interesting stuff, because it also has to do, and we could talk a lot about that, but today we only hit this a little bit. We might make a focus on it for an entire show, but today only like that. There were occult groups in Germany, and one I want to mention is the Thule Gesellschaft. Thule Gesellschaft. Those were not only occultists, but the Thule Gesellschaft was a organization in which, before National Socialism, all these philosophers, or these people of the Völkische Bewegung, the ideology that was used then by Hitler. People like that were in the Thule Gesellschaft. And within the Thule Gesellschaft, again, you had another inner circle, another secret group. And this is what we wanna look at now. And this is called the Vril Gesellschaft. Gesellschaft, by the way, is just a German term for society. So Thule society, you might call it, and now Vril society. The term Vril is also interesting. In our German language, it doesn't have any obvious roots. It sounds strange. But we're not going to focus on there. But this Vril Gesellschaft, let's look at these guys. What were they doing? They were similar like Crowley. They were also doing these seances. Also at that time, they did not call it channeling, but they were also speaking of media that they put into place to establish a communication with other entities, other forces, other beings. And at the next picture, I show you the media of the Vril Gesellschaft, and that's also very interesting, because it was only women. The Vril Damen, the Vril ladies, so to say. And it says here, some of the most important Vril ladies between 1922 and 1945. So they had quite a lot of these medias, but here are the most important ones. This here on the far left is Maria Ortich, very, very often mentioned, and also this lady here, Sigrun. We don't even know more about this name. Probably this is not her birth name. It's a nom de guerre, so to say. Sigrun. I mean, it has runes, and Sig is one of the runes. So Sigrun is also some Germanic artificial name. Now, what jumps into the eye is not only that these ladies were beautiful, but that most of them had very, very long hair. Very long hair. From Maria Ortich and Sigrun, it's said that their hair was nearly going all the way down to their feet. Very long hair. And they say this has something to do, you know, the hair with antennas to be more sensible for these vibrations. Now, I don't want to focus too much on that hair, because in the end it doesn't matter. I mean, you can see also very spiritual beings with short hair, you know, any monks or so, you shave your hair. So I don't claim it so much, but it's interesting. That's for them, the hair had a certain significance to do that job, so to say. Now, the Vril Society, their aim was similar like Crowley, to get in contact with other forces. And it was done by these Vril ladies, and indeed they were successful. And they were doing this is more than 20 years. So for a long time, they were doing these channelings. And who they were channeling, they say they were in contact, and now it comes, with aliens. When Crowley was speaking, Crowley was a little bit earlier, it was still the Ascended Masters, but those ladies, they already say it was aliens. To get more specific, they said they were in contact with some beings coming from Aldebaran, a certain sun in Aldebaran, and these Aldebaran people, they were telling them, hey, We are the ancestors, the cosmic ancestors of the Aryan race. So listen to us, and we're going to help you in your time. We're going to strengthen this Aryan feeling. So that's interesting, because I mean that's exactly what these guys wanted to hear, isn't it? That's what they were looking for. Didn't we already speak about the Ahnenerbe? I guess when we talked about the Grail, we hit that. So this was the goal of these people like the Vril Society. They wanted to check for any hidden connections that would prove the idea of an Aryan race and of the superiority of Aryan race. That's what they were looking for. They were looking for that in archaeology, they were looking for that in the Himalaya expeditions, and I told you about Otto Rahn, and, you know, that's what they were looking for. And One way of looking at it was these channelings. And what they got? Hey, they got in contact with Aldebaran, the ancestors of Aryans. But is that really, really true? Is that true? I mean, couldn't it be that the same people that were giving information to the Vril Gesellschaft, or the same beings or spirits, are giving the information to Crowley and to others? But you tell them a different story. You always tell them what they want to hear, or what suits them, what fits them, so they get credibility. When you talk to Crowley, wow, you talk about Shambhala, and that's in 19th century, also in these English spiritistic circles. Now this was the hot thing. Shambhala, Tibet, you know, ascended masters. Of course, Madame Blavatsky writes a lot about Tibet and this. So that's what they got. And those German occultist circles that were more on this Aryan trip, hey, they get what they want to hear. Oh, that's interesting. Now, and this Vril stuff is also very interesting. We might hit it even more on some other shows, because what they were channeling was not only some, let's say, spiritual knowledge or wisdom that makes you get along with life, but here we're talking about really technical stuff. That's interesting, yeah. This entire stories about German programs of Flugscheiben, of flying discs, of technology that overcomes gravitational forces and stuff. This comes all from this Vril Society. They were claiming that they, from Aldebaran, that they really got some technical support. They were channeling construction plans and stuff. That's what they claim. Of course, it's difficult to prove this, if it's true or not. But personally, if you ask me, I think that's a lot of things point that indeed in Germany at that time there were these programs on building these flying discs and totally new approach to certain technologies. They were working on this, and they claimed they got it from this channeling. So this was important stuff for them. Interesting. Now, but the question is, where does it come from? And is it really helpful? I mean, in the end, if I look at the Vril Gesellschaft and the time of Second World War, obviously, this stuff didn't help Germany to win the war. obviously there was no flying disc that was that could overcome any airplanes at that time. It was not possible. And interesting enough, many American and also English pilots of the Second World War, they report something of the Foo Fighters. Have you heard that one? Foo Fighters. It's not only a rock band, but the Foo Fighters, they were first reports of some things that are also flying in the air, and they are shiny, they are more like light, you can't even tell is this material. And pretty soon the pilots found out that the Foo Fighters they are not really a threat. They don't shoot or something. Yeah? They might try to irritate the pilot and to make him fearful, but after a while they found out these things are harmless. So they don't do anything. Yeah? So they just turned out to be a story. Yeah? A little detail of Second World War, the Foo Fighters. Yeah, and the question is again, was that useful information? Was it really helpful for us, or was it is there some element of deceiving in there? And that's what I feel there. Now, let's close this stuff, and we're gonna keep it maybe in mind, and we come to the next point. And I tell you, this next story is also, wow, it's mind-blowing. And if you have never heard about this story, I tell you, research it, check it out, because this is interesting, interesting stuff. And it all goes around this gentleman here. And this is an American. His name is Jack Parsons, or John Parsons. I guess both is possible, John or Jack Parsons. Both names are mentioned, and he's also working with both names. And he was a rocket scientist. That's what he was, John Parsons, and I guess it's safe to say that he's one of the masterminds of the American space program. Jack Parsons, John Parsons. What he was doing, he was a genius in science, and he developed a new fuel, no more a liquid fuel, but a fuel that is more safe for rockets, and that was you couldn't build rockets without this technology. You know, he was very, very important, and his place of work was the JPL laboratories in Pasadena, California. Now, Pasadena, you might remember, that has something to do with all this NASA and rockets, and indeed it's the JPL laboratories that were building these rocket engines, and JPL. It stands for Jet Propulsion Laboratories, but many people also claim that it's John Parsons Laboratories, because he was the boss and he was a mastermind, and it was his work that was fulfilled there. So that's interesting. In Pasadena, California, this guy was working all day as a scientist. Absolutely scientist. We're talking about rocket science, which is sort of a synonym for something complicated. We say rocket science. He was a rocket scientist. He was the best one in America. And at the same time, this man was also an occultist. And I know this sounds weird for us, because we think, I mean, if you're working in the scientific world, all is scientific, all is rational. I mean, this is the total opposite of the occult world. But that's interesting. I mean, this is maybe for most of us, but for some top occultists, it's not like that. They can do in both. And that was him. This guy had a house near Pasadena, and his house, over decades, it was kind of a hub for freaky people. Occultists of all sorts were hanging around in Parsons' house, doing all sorts of stuff, rituals, magic, you name it. I mean, this was probably really an amazing scene. I guess we cannot even imagine the stuff that was going on in Jack Parsons' house over the years. Probably you have to look at some Harry Potter scenario to kind of get an idea of what was going on there. So at daytime, this guy was working in the laboratories and doing his rocket science, and coming home, he was entering this bizarre occult world. Yeah. And now this guy had also a strong relation to the aforementioned Aleister Crowley. What was the connection? Aleister Crowley was a British man. This guy was American. And Crowley founded his order, the OTO. And Parsons, he was sort of a pupil of the teacher Crowley. But it was a deep relation. It was not only that he read some books of Crowley and found that cool. No, they were in communication with each other. And they trusted each other. They became, I don't know if friends is the right term, but they had a relationship of master and student. And Crowley trusted Parsons so much that he made him the American chief or represent of his entire order, of the OTO. He was the American head of the OTO, so to say. And that already shows the strong relationship between those two. And now, later on, at later times, they got in arguments with each other, and this relationship broke. But for many years, they had a strong relationship. Now, what Jack Parsons wanted to do, he wanted to continue, so to say, the work of Aleister Crowley. And the idea of these guys, these occultists, is to, by certain magic rituals, to tear apart this border between our reality here in 3D, in flesh and blood, our material world, our earth here, to open up the border into other dimensions, into other realities, so to say. That was the plan, to tear this apart, to create a gateway in which you communication between different, between different dimensions or different realities can happen. That was the idea. And Crowley started this stuff, and Jack Parsons, he continued on that path. Now, what he was doing, and this is really important stuff, check it out. I try to explain it at my best, but this is important stuff, so look it up. There's lots of this in English language, you can find this. What this guy started then was the so-called Babylon working. Babylon, not Babylon, like the city, but Babylon. But actually, it's kind of the same, because it, if you look at the etymology of this term, it comes from Arabic, and Bab is like a gate. You visit any old Arabic town, you can visit the gates, and it's called a Bab. And Bab Alon, that's, so to say, a gateway to other dimensions, to the stars, to the realm of gods or something like that. That is a Bab Alon. And that's interesting, that because also the city Babylon has the same roots, and of course we know that many rumors go around Babylon, that might be stargates and stuff like that. Interesting. But this is the modern stuff, 20th century. This Babylon working—that's the name of the ritual. And this was a great ritual that you could not perform on one day or something. This goes over weeks or months, and nobody has ever done this ritual before. I mean, he was hitting new territory. And as a matter of fact, it was over this Babylon working that Crowley and Tim got in trouble with each other. Crowley said, "Don't do this. You don't know how to do this, and you might mess it up and leave it." But he said, "Well, that's my mission. I'm going to do it anyway." So that's where they got in trouble. This Babylon working is such a and I'm not a magician. I'm not participating, and never did in any of those rituals. So I'm only from second hand, so to say. I try to explain this, but this ritual was so great. You couldn't do that alone, just because nobody knew how to do it. There's no description how to do this Babylon working. Yeah? You don't find it in any books or something. Nobody ever did this. So the question was, how can you do this Babylon working? Yeah? And At that time of the story, there comes in another figure that you are quite familiar with. I guess all of you know him. It's a man called L. Ron Hubbard. Yes, it is the L. Ron Hubbard who later was to find the Church of Scientology. But before he did that, he was an occultist, and he was also hanging out in Pasadena, California, at the freak house of John Parsons. And so the two, they joined forces to do this Babylon working. One guy, that was him, Jack Parsons, he was really doing the ritual, whatever was to be done. And L. Ron Hubbard, who they said was more a sensible man, also a sort of a media, his role was to get in communication with higher forces, or how, whatever they called it, you know, higher beings. Hubbard had to, so to say, to channel this stuff, and then he told Jack Parsons what to do next. What is afforded next by the ritual? Yeah? So Hubbard is channeling with the spirits, and they tell Hubbard what to do, and he's telling it to Jack Parsons. Yeah? Now, when you check out Crowley, many of these rituals that come out of this school, this Crowley stuff. It has to do with sex magic. I call it magic because I guess Crowley called it that way. It's not written in a normal way, but it's written with a CK on the end, magic. Interesting also, because the CK might even point to some German way of speaking it, but okay, I don't know. Anyway, sex magic, that was a central part of any of those rituals. It didn't go without there. So they needed this, or they used this sexual energy for this ritual. That was the force that you need. And for to create enough of the sexual energy, and I tell you, I mean, if you look at the details, you might find some disturbing stuff. What kind of sexual practices? You know, it's not love driven, but it's ritual driven. So there's some strange things going on. And what they needed for this was a woman, but not any woman, but a special woman, what they called a scarlet woman. Now the term scarlet, I guess it goes back to the Bible, to the revelations of John, and scarlet is also it's a color, it's a reddish color, but it's also wasn't it the name of the whore of Babylon that is in the Bible mentioned there, the whore of Babylon, that was scarlet, and. These guys were looking for a scarlet woman that has to be a woman of an enormous sexual power and who has this archetype that was already described in the Bible, the whore of Babylon. This kind of woman they were looking for. And they found her, so to say, and it was this lady. Her name is Margie Cameron. And this is, of course, a black and white photograph, but she had this reddish scarlet hair, and she was the scarlet woman for Jack Parsons. And so they used her, they needed to have to create this sexual power. I mean, there are certain women that have this talent of I mean, we are all sexual beings, obviously, but some women have this special quality with in terms of sexual energy. That's just nature. I mean, you know? and she's one of those. And they needed her. They needed this energy, and so they also want to open up this gate to let other beings come into our reality. Now, if that's a good idea or not, that's something else we might discuss. I mean, if you ask me, I guess it's not a good idea to tear up something. I mean, it's out of my idea, it's violence against nature. I mean, if there is something like other dimensions, and if there's a board in between, maybe that's a good thing. I don't know if that's such a good idea to tear up a board and come on in, and you don't even know what's coming. I mean, there might be benevolent forces that might be helpful for us. It might even give us some technical transfer so we can hit the problems that we have on Earth today, ecology and stuff. We can heal, maybe. But also, there's a great possibility, and we don't know that you open up the gate and in comes some beings that have their own agenda that maybe are not benevolent for human beings. We don't know that. So if you ask me, I mean, I would rather not touch it. But I mean, these were people at their time, and their vision was to open up this this gate. Now the question is, was that stuff successful? And if yes, what did they open up? In the aftermath, because it's also the timeline is interesting. I mean, this Babylon working was done in the 40s, the 1940s. And it's indeed true that that was also the time where this entire UFO phenomena became big. And many people in America witnessed UFOs, and it became part of the pop culture. There was pop songs about it. It was this entire science fiction genre came up. And that's also interesting because it has to do with the time. When we're talking about science fiction, I mean, where did that come from? The earliest science fiction authors might be somebody like H.P. Lovecraft, Howard Lovecraft. Very interesting character also. I suggest you check into Lovecraft's book. Interesting, because he was maybe at the 1910s or so. In those days, he was already writing stories in which he created his own myth, his own universal stuff, and it was called the Cthulhu myth. The Cthulhu myth, and just in a nutshell, because read it on your own. But just in a nutshell, the story is that in Antarctica, somewhere deep under the ice, there are these, as Lovecraft calls them, these old beings, the old ones. They are somewhere under the ice, sleeping or in a state of frozen, but they might wake up, and of course, he doesn't also use the term alien, and it's not quite clear what are these old beings. I mean, but he always says they are. Yeah, he uses the term alien. They are not alien like extraterrestrials, but they are alien to our world. They do not come from here. They don't belong here. Maybe they come from another age, but they are very strange for us, and they don't really fit in this reality. That's the story of Lovecraft. And then Lovecraft also already in the stories he talks about certain rituals that are done, magical rituals, magical practices, to tear up a gate, to let in these forces, or to wake up, to awaken these forces, the Cthulhu that are sleeping somewhere under the ice. Interesting. I mean, it's very similar narrative. I mean, by magical practices, you wake them up. Also, when we're already at Lovecraft, let me just mention, within Lovecraft's work, he also claims that there's certain books that that contain these rituals and how to do it. He always mentions the Necronomicon. That's what Lovecraft mentions as a book where you get the description how to open up these, to create a gate. Yeah. Interesting. But you might also, even 19th century, you might find prototypes of science fiction. Check out guys like Frenchman Jules Verne. But still, this is far away from the narratives that we have in modern times. You know, a Jules Verne, he does not describe any flying saucers or stuff like this. He also has the first ideas that maybe there might be life in the stars, but it just started there. Now, what I want to say that, from my point of view, it's just a change of narrative that happened. It's to speak of UFOs, flying discs, flying through the stars over this dimensions and stuff, aliens. This is all a projection of modern man. Because in 19th century they were describing it different. And if you even go longer back, there's no stories about aliens at all. I mean, of course, in if you look at human history and all over the world, you have myths of angels, of demons and stuff. And of course, as like Shakespeare said, something, there's much more between heaven and earth as we know. That's true. But nobody was ever claiming, hey, there was things flying around or aliens were coming. As a matter of fact, I spent a long time in India, and India is still a living old culture. And for people in India, this entire science fiction stuff, it has no resonance at all. When in India, it's sometimes fun to go to the movies, to go to the cinema, because Indians love that, you know. I mean, most of them, they don't even have a TV at home, so the movies are always, the cinemas are full, and it's great entertainment, you know. And one time I was in India at a science fiction movie, one of those Star Wars movies, and there was nobody there. Usually the cinema is always full in India, but in that case, nobody was there. They are not interested in science fiction. For them, this is something that doesn't resonate with them. And that's not because it was a Western movie, because other Western movies are quite big there. Check out the Mummy. That stuff that the Indians like, ancient temple, and this comes out a mummy. That's what they like. There's some resonance with them. But with the science fiction stuff, no resonance. Now, what does it tell us? This is a narrative that comes out of the modern Western world. This is where this, out of our modern Western technological world, where we build already airplanes and stuff, this is where this narrative of aliens is coming from. And it was a combination of these spiritist people of 19th century, Theosophical Society, and people like those who were channeling. And this was then changed, adapted a narrative that fits into our modern world. That's exactly it. You might say it's old stuff in with a new a sign on it, a new label on it. It's the same old wine, but you put a new label on it. I know this is new, but it's the same narratives like before. And now, if you have all this information, I mean, what do we do now with this alien stuff? I'm no more in this. I mean, I know there's many, many strange stories. And I'm also, I want to say, the alien myth is not the same like the UFO. UFO, it means unidentified flying object. We don't know what it is. And I have no doubts there's sightings like that. I was also witnessing something in the air that fits into a UFO, no flying saucer, but I was also seeing light formations, and it was not alone. Other people saw it also. Whoa, what is this? These things are real. Stories about far out technologies might also be real, but out of my view, they come from Earth. These are Earth technologies. And that's actually what this entire UFO, no, this entire alien myth is also about. It's, out of my view, it's a cover-up. It's something laid in front, and it's hiding something behind. And there's there's two things that are covered up by this alien narrative. One thing is that indeed there is technology, mind-blowing technology, alchemistic technology that roots in a different way of living, in a different physics, in a different science, a holistic science, not a materialistic science that we study now for a few hundred years. But there's also another way, and those Germans in the 20s, they approached, they tried to walk that path of alchemistic science. That is not only materialistic, and I'm sure this stuff was developed on and on and on. I'm sure that there is something like higher technologies, maybe flying devices that don't need or that have no problem anymore with gravitation, and that they don't need a big rocket that is exploding. You know, the force of explosion you fly up. I guess some totally different stuff is possible, but it does not come from aliens. That's what I say. It's coming from the Earth. It's from human beings, and then it's a tool of power. You know, we have certain technologies, but we don't share it with you. That's a way of having great influence and control. And whenever something of this technology is witnessed somewhere, hey, then you can say, "Ooh, look! Did you see that? Well, that's not us. This is alien." You know, by that you can take the responsibility away. You hide it. That's what it is. But this alien myth is hiding the fact that we have on Earth with human beings, that we have a system of rulership, that we have a system of that we have technologies. And just one little example for that, and of course that opens up a whole new door that I want to go through today. Check out 9/11. Check out the work of Dr. Judy Wood. advanced technology at work. Check it out. You know, there you see it. Yeah. So this stuff exists. But whenever it shows up, you might say, hey, it's alien. We don't have it. That's dangerous. So these people that are on the capstone of the pyramid, these are not aliens. These are human beings. But they hide behind this myth, oh, there's aliens. And in older times, it was maybe, oh, yeah, there's these ascended masters. Something that is not human, or something that is overhuman, superhuman, you might even say. Also some strange idea of the 19th, the Übermensch. This is what this points to. So that's the first thing, what this alien myth is covering. And the second is that maybe indeed we have these occultist practices, and maybe indeed they came to something. But then this is what they also don't want to show us. And maybe they were successful in opening up gateways, doors to some other dimension. And to cover up that, they are talking about aliens. The thing is, I'm sure there are no aliens in flesh and blood. This is not possible. I cannot prove this. And of course, I might also be wrong. I mean, you know, nobody of us really knows. We have to be open-minded, and when we deal with stuff like that, of course, nobody knows. This is maybe not the last word. But for many years, I was on this thing. Okay, yeah, probably it's going to be aliens. But the deeper I get into it, I see this is a narrative. And it's covering up human rulership. That's an important thing. Now, if this opening of others' dimensions, if that was successful, yeah, that was what I was thinking of. And for many years, I was also taking this as very much likely. They were successful. And you have these entities. I mean, there's talks about Archons, for example. Many good researchers were talking about this stuff. Look it up if you're not familiar with it. Archons. This is the same idea. There's some not incarnated beings that are only on a energetic or on a soul level, but beings that don't belong here, and they somehow get here and they work on this. They get an influence on our world, and some people even go so far to say that these beings are even trying to reshape the world. To make it more adaptable to their form of living. Because on this world, we are the perfect beings here. As a human being, you're perfectly adapted to this reality. You breathe air, you've got lungs, you know, you can drink. I mean, this entire body functioning is perfect. Yeah? So if something from that does not belong here wants to come here, it cannot really live here. So some people even say that stuff like geoengineering, you know, reshaping the earth, might even have its roots in there, that this earth is reshaped to make it more a better home for some beings that don't even belong here. Interesting, yeah. But what I'm saying, I don't believe that any of these stories that there's other beings in flesh and blood like we are. I don't believe that. If there's beings of other dimensions, now that's another story. Also, there for many years I said yes. I guess that's it. But to be honest, lately I'm even doubting that. I even doubt that, because lately I cannot prove this, it's just a personal point, but I become more and more human and humanist. And what I see now is human psyche is also infinite. It's infinite. If you travel inside, if you are a psychonaut, you find the same infinity as if you start counting the stars. So I'm not sure about this, but where I stand now, I guess there's nothing else but human psyche, and all these phenomena have somehow to do with human psyche. Of course, human psyche can then manifest and stuff. You know, I'm not talking, oh, this is all bullshit. Obviously not. Believe me, in my life I've witnessed a lot of things. I met amazing people, and I heard amazing stories, and I also witnessed amazing stuff that does not fit in our university worldview. You know, I'm open to this. But nowadays, I guess it's all coming out of humans itself. That's what it is. And I tell you, people, this is a good message. Because if it would be true that we are just the product of some aliens, maybe the direct product, aliens created us, or also if maybe we were living here before, but aliens came and they are dominating the world and setting up the parameters how we live and ruling, so to say. If it is aliens that are hovering above and controlling everything, if that would be the case, I guess we would be in a really bad situation, wouldn't we? I mean, if that would be the case, where is freedom? Where is human value? If that would be the case, that if you and me, if we would only be products of some, call them gods or Nibiru or whatever, if that would be the case, where is the use in doing this work that I'm doing now? Where is the use in looking for truth and looking for dignity? Where would it be? Because if that would be the case, I would say, okay, then I accept. I'm just an ox or something, you know, and I start I stop thinking, I stop looking for this, because then I accept, okay, there's some higher stuff, you know, there's some god or alien, and hey, they are so much more than I am. Then okay, I can just bow down my head and work whatever they want me to do. Then you get into slavish mentality, you see. But if it's only human beings that are creating certain patterns how to rule, if they were hiding and deceiving, but if it's human beings, then we have a chance of healing, don't we? Because then we are connected with each other. If it's human beings that are on top of this pyramid, maybe even having great access to technology and stuff, but if it's human beings, we are still together, aren't we? And I know nowadays with terms of transhumanism, maybe some of these groups, they indeed want to break away from the human family and create some new status, but I don't think they will be successful. At least at the moment they are still not. They are still human beings like you and me, and that's a good idea, because that gives us the possibility that we can heal this world, that we can get together. If it's human beings, we have similar desires. We are the same kind, you see? That gives us the possibility of healing, of making getting peace in this world, of getting things in balance. But if we would be only the product of some alien, of some super form that is millions of years in development ahead of us, come on, where's any freedom? I mean, can you live with this? Then you just be like ox, you know, you work and don't ask. Because then you're at the same position like the ox is with a farmer or with a rancher, you know. I mean, the ox cannot live free. You have to do what the rancher is dictating you, and there's no way out. But for us human beings, and that's really, that's coming from my heart, I know we have dignity. We are special, you know. Human being is special. Human life is special. And there is no, for me, there is no other outside force that is controlling us. It's only us. So the key to healing is also to be found in us. And we human beings can make this world come together again. Now I've got one more towards the end here. I've got one more picture for you. This is also interesting. This is a assembly of people. They were assembling at one of the places of one of the Rockefellers. The Rockefellers. I mean, you know the Rockefellers. I don't have to tell you about that. This is one of the most important and influential and big families of the world in America. And one of those Rockefellers is this guy, and he is. This was in the 70s, I guess. 70s. This photo was made in the 70s, and. This Rockefeller guy, he called out all of these people who are working on this alien story, UFO and stuff. And he was saying, hey, come to my place. I'm gonna support this. I'm gonna finance that. And we see some very important people of the scene. There's Stephen Greer there. There's Linda Moulton Howe, good people, you know. I don't want to bash them. I mean, it's interesting to listen to them. I mean, you know, this is also they do their work, you know. But to be honest, I mean, just if some of the Rockefellers would come to me and say, "Hey, Frank, interesting work that you're doing. what about coming to a conference at my house? I would already think, ooh, is that a good idea? I might go there. If I would say, okay, maybe I can get connection to people in these high places in the name of love, in the name of healing, maybe it's a good idea. Why not? Because these are human beings. The power structures behind the or on top of the pyramid, these are human beings. So if we get in contact, okay, I would do it maybe. Maybe we can communicate, maybe we can get you back into the circle, yeah? Okay, maybe I would do that. But what I certainly would not do, well, I'm sure, I'm speaking of myself, is when these guys are financing works and all of a sudden you get in a, you get dependent of these guys. I mean, I know this doesn't prove anything, but at least for me, this is an irritating picture. That some of the most important represents of this new age alien UFO stories, they are backed by one of the most powerful and elite families of like the Rockefellers. At least it's irritating in some way. Of course, it doesn't prove anything, and I also don't want to bash these guys. I know they're also doing good work, and maybe from their position, it's they do their work, and hey, you're happy of any support. Same like we need your support. We need your support. I mean, how can we finance our work here? Of course, we need support, and we're happy from support. So maybe I can understand that on a personal way, but at least for me, this makes me this is irritating. To get it all together now, in a nutshell, what I wanted to say is there's many strange things going on Earth. We might witness a lot. This world is a mystery. The Earth is a mystery, life is a mystery, and we don't understand everything. But this alien story is a very, very modern narrative. It's a narrative made for the modern world, for the technological age, and it started out from people who were occultists, and in a way it has to do with magic. One thing I didn't tell you, but I wanted to bring it in here. The word magic. I mean, do you know where that comes from? This word. The core of the word magic is magus. It's Latin, and magus. That's the same root like in the word image. Imagine, imag. That's a picture. That's what magic is. That's what magus is. It's a picture. So the magic and the magician, what this is planting a picture, planting a vision. And this vision then becomes reality. If many people see it, then you believe it, and then all of a sudden it is reality. That's magic. Now, isn't that exactly what we see with this entire alien story? Transported by Hollywood, which is, again, has to do with magic. Those are the ones, the masters of the picture. Hollywood. The Hollywood, you know, the like in Harry Potter. It's the Hollywood. It's like your, how do you call it again, you know, for magic. Hollywood. Hollywood are the ones showing the pictures. They are the ones planting the pictures in us. And I'm also from this generation, you know. When I was a child and I was the first time in the cinema watching Star Wars, I will never forget this. This was coming big into me as a child. Wow, you sit there in the cinema and then the first scene of the first Star Wars movie, you know, when this big spaceship is coming there and it doesn't end, it gets bigger. Wow, that was the way I was all conditioned. Yeah? That there's a lot of space and there's different colonies and you can travel through space and all this stuff. I was conditioned in that. But I found out that, well, this is Hollywood. This is a story. This entire story, and also interesting to see the connection that we have there. We have Hollywood. Right next to Hollywood, we have Pasadena. We have this Babylon workings. Again, right next to it, we have Laurel Canyon and all of the stories of show business, rock and roll, and occultism. And we might hit this at another time. And we have nowadays NASA. At NASA, the space agency, I mean, it's directly a product of occultists, isn't it? We saw Jack Parsons, one of the major American figures, who's a pupil of a student of Aleister Crowley, and then also remember the Project Paperclip. You know this stuff. Project Paperclip was the code name of getting elites of Nazi Germany after the war, getting them into America to work then for Americans. Of course, we all know Werner von Braun. He's the greatest example. I mean, he was a Nazi guy. He was working on this stuff in Germany, and when the war was over, he did not hit the courts of Nuremberg. No, he was brought to America. Work now for us. Sounds reasonable also. You can understand why they did this. But this Project Paperclip, we're not talking about a handful of people, like five or six genius scientists. No, we're talking about hundreds, maybe thousands of people. So this NASA is directly born out of occultists from the Crowley school and of occultists coming from Germany. And they together invited NASA. And all of a sudden we've got these worldviews, these images planted in us, and this narrative of star life and stuff. But hey, when I'm a human being, I look at the stars, I just see stars, you know. I don't even know if there's any life. I've never seen anybody from another planet. And I tell you, I've seen crazy and astounding things, but I never talked with an alien. And all my forefathers did either. Because also, when you look at archaeology, I mean, where do you find it? Of course, we might debate on this, and guys like Eric von Däniken, he pointed out maybe there was aliens there at ancient times. But also, this is an entire subject, and I discuss and study that as well. And what I see is, I don't see not one singular proof in entire archaeology that is proving, hey, there's something extraterrestrial, there's something out of Earth. Again, for me, it's just arts and manufactures of human beings that are astounding beings. And also maybe 5,000 years ago, some human beings could make amazing things, you know. This is, I'm a humanist. I see human, man is in center, and this is our Earth. And these myths, out of my point of view, they have the only purpose, like, to hold us like under something like a magic spell. So we cannot recognize the great and the dignity that is within, and the creative power that also our mind, our spirit has, our heart has. There's so much, you know, there's so much power, creative power in us, but we are under this narrative, we are only a piece of shit, so to say. You know, the Earth is only one of millions and billions, and we're only on the edge of something, with something unimportant, you know. But hey, if you call this Earth and human life unimportant, do you see the danger? Because then, of course, this is then a legitimation for rulership or for treating other people bad, you know, because you take them the dignity away. But what if it's only us humans? You know, then it's a good message. And that's what comes from my heart. Of course, it's not the last word, and I'm not claiming to know it all. There's amazing stuff going on, but I'm quite sure there's this alien stuff. This is an invention of occultists, and it's used to hide certain things, to hide rulership, and to hold human beings down. And me as a human being, I'm pro-human, you know, so that's why I reject those narratives. And I also hope and wish that this information was helpful for you also to emancipate of this slavish mentality, like Bob Marley said, and to focus on yourself, on your own strength. And out of our own strength, we can use this land and live with it and create a way of living that fits our nature, and we don't need somebody else for that. All right, folks, that was it for today. I hope it was inspiring for you, and if it is so, then I would be happy if you again click into our shows. Please support us, support our work. Spread the channel, give it to other people, so we can reach more, a bigger audience. And also, if you have the means of financially supporting us, we would be helpful. I mean, of course, we're also working on this, and any help is welcome. But the most important and the most happy is for me that if you're just joining and if I get your resonance, that makes me happy. In that sense, goodbye from Germany. See you next time, huh? Ciao.